Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM. I'm Jim Burke, and this is Brewrocracy Now. I'm here with my co-host John Morrow and Mayor David Faber are in the room. And we also have zooming in, and I guess have to turn that up, Emma Bolin, who is Director of Planning and Community Development. So I think the agenda for today is to talk about what happened at the business meeting at City Council on Monday and having to do with zoning law changes that are going into effect before April 1st. Am I characterizing this?
I mean, I like your optimism. We might couch it as it requires at least two touches of City Council. So it's actually coming back on Monday for a final decision, if they so choose.
This coming Monday.
But because Monday was kind of a big deal, it was, you know, I'll let Emma speak to all the work that went into that, including work with a number of community volunteers, the Planning Commission. And that, you know, council went through 381 pages of packet for that meeting just for this item.
Yes.
David could speak to the considerations that council is making as part of this two-step process. So, Emma, what's this whole thing about? How did it start? What's this tactical infill project all about?
Thanks, John. So, our tactical infill project is our first step in our multi-year housing strategy that I would say the city has really been working on since 2016. But of course, I'm new, so I had to, you know, try and remove some of the immediate barriers so we can empower property owners to construct housing. So how can we have something that's homegrown, that leverages what, you know, we're good at, and also re-legalizes the middle housing types. So townhouses, multiplexes, and that kind of thing. So it's a really fast effort where we're trying to, you know, tackle the low-hanging fruit. And so a number of changes were approved in the first reading on Monday night. Some of the ones that are pretty exciting are to allow tiny houses on wheels as accessory dwelling units, to allow two accessory dwelling units per lot, and to allow employer-provided housing in certain zones where it's not already allowed, like some of our manufacturing marine zones, and our commercial hospital zone as well, so that our employers like the port or the hospital can leverage some land that may not have been zoned appropriately for that before. And then we're also providing another way to subdivide property so that you can cluster homes more easily without a higher level of permit review. So we're trying to get rid of some of the more challenging and rigorous paths to getting housing. So let's try and shortcut that a little bit.
So some of the barriers to the, and some of the antiquated zoning that we have in terms of how much space needs to be around each house and in each neighborhood, and how lot sizes affect the density of the city. Because the city has limited, finite land. I was fascinated by all the discussion of the tiny houses on wheels, and I came up with something. A loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and fowl.
Right.
All right. So to add a little levity to this, because it's all very serious.
That thou shall not speak in riddles,
thou
Jim?
Shall not speak in riddles. No. So, but there was even an advocate for tiny houses on wheels, a man who builds them, who spoke at the podium. There were a lot of comments from the public. In fact, I think I did a little timing of that. I think it was about an hour and 20 minutes, almost an hour and a half of public comment just on this alone. I was just astounded by the patience of all of you, the two of you, especially David and John, just sitting there while there was a computer issue, just hanging in there. I'm impressed by that kind of patience. I'm afraid I don't possess it myself.
That's what government's all about.
Really? Patience.
Patience.
Yes. So John or David, do you want to talk about how does this get us to the goal of creating more housing, and does it get us to the goal, or is it get us closer to the goal of more affordable housing in Port Townsend?
Sure. Well, I want to start first of all with, you mentioned the perhaps antiquated rules around
you know, zoned capacity, basically capacity for where houses can be built, how many houses can be built,
right,
amount of land that needs to be around an individual home. Those rules aren't necessarily all that antiquated. They date back to about the 60s, I believe, when we had our modern zoning code implemented. Prior to that point, people had a lot more flexibility with their land. Mm-hmm. And we saw in uptown neighborhood a number of different types of housing, smaller housing units. There's a sixplex about two blocks away from my house on a, I think, about a 6,000, 7,000 square foot lot, which currently would be illegal to build in the R2 zone, which is what most of uptown is zoned as. So really, in part, and Emma mentioned the missing middle housing as a concept that's become quite popular to talk about.
Right.
That's kind of going back to allowing those types of housing that used to be quite commonplace, stopped being commonplace in the more modern era, and really are the more starter homes, less expensive types of homes, at least in terms of the sunk cost to build it, the capital outlay for the land, the road work that you have to do, the foundation, the roof, all of that stuff can be split across more housing units, so it decreases the cost of entry. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I think I sort of skipped right past one. Mm-hmm. You asked a question, though, about does this get us down the path towards affordability?
Right.
Now, of course, the answer to that question, unfortunately, is it is uncertain. But one thing that is true is statistically, there is no city on earth that has a constrained development environment, basically does not produce a lot of housing that isn't also very expensive in terms of, nothing correlates more with high price than low production of housing.
And
so getting us moving in the direction of allowing more housing to be built in the space that we have gets us at least down that pathway. But it's certainly not enough.
Right.
And I think that's why Emma noted that this is part of a multi-year approach and a strategy that says, look, low-hanging fruit now because it's urgent. We've got, for one reason, we've got to play some catch up because we've maybe taken our eye off the ball and need to catch up to the reality, which is we have a pretty serious housing crisis and a supply crisis right now.
Right.
The other is that by, between now and April 1st, we have this sort of carrot or maybe like a stick in front of us saying, until that date, there's an incentive for us to move quickly because we have safe harbor from appeals for those who might think, no, don't, they might be anti-density or don't think that this is the right path forward, for code changes or want us to tap the brakes and slow down. Right. Right now, between now and April 1st, as one small piece of the very large package of what we need to do as a community, there's an incentive to move quickly. So that's why we're doing this. Does it mean we're going to stop, giving tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars directly to providers from local authority tax? No way. Of course, we're going to keep doing that. And in fact, we're pushing our advocacy role as a city to advocate the state legislature to increase our ability to provide affordable housing with things like REIT 3. It's a current bill going through the legislature right now. Will we stop building Evans Vista and to wait and pull together a strategy? No way. We're trying to fast track our own ability to use our powers of accumulating grant funding, currently to the tune of about $5.5 million from federal and state sources.
Right.
Plus another 0.5 from the county. So, $6 million from outside funding, which would be hard to generate ourselves from county, state, and federal sources to build 150 or more units of workforce affordable housing in town. We need to do that too. Do we need to do more code changes? Absolutely. We need to continue the path. So there's a number of things we need to do over multiple years. Mm-hmm. We've actually mapped some of this out. Emma's done an extraordinary job actually presenting what looks like a complicated graphic, but when you look into the details, and this is from a while ago, you could see that there's actually a sensible path forward through some of this work that lands us, next big touch point, 2025. We've got a completely different comprehensive plan, perhaps, and that actually guides the city toward the outcomes we desire.
Well, I have a question about that, and maybe Emma could answer this. So there was a comprehensive plan back in 2015, 2016?
2016.
But then the city didn't do anything to create more housing or more affordable housing at that time. But we have totally other people now, right, who are working on this thing. who's to say that maybe in 2 or 3 years that you guys are not working here anymore, that you're not working in city government? God forbid. But what happens if you're not? And then all of a sudden, there's other people who have different agendas in terms of this problem, and decide that they just want to go with all market housing for everything.
Maybe I'll take a stab at that. I'll just say one of the things I shared with Taylor, was it last week or the week before, after being away to where I used to live in Auckland, New Zealand, was, and I shared this with City Council too, was it takes a lot of years to actually see the real work come to life on the ground. And so to some degree, that's disappointing, because all the efforts right now, we don't get the gratification of seeing things happen immediately. But at the same time, the pressure's on to make that happen now, because in 3 or 4 years, we want to see those things happen. So, right. You know, in a way, we are always working for our future. And I would say, you know, with something like the comprehensive plan, by taking a strategic approach, both with zoning and with, you know, long range planning, It allows us to codify the blueprint for a longer period of time. Of course, that can change. Ordinances can change. You know, city councils change. City managers change. Right. I'm told. but actually, in a way, the stability of the system is, and I used to say this in former roles, like if you're always trying to take a different tack on a strategic plan every year, you're basically going in circles. And right. So
you're not actually planning.
And you know, this might sound trite to some, but we have an extraordinary team right now, and we are bringing new capacity onto that team and Emma's team. Emma herself, we are lucky to have her work for the city.
Absolutely.
We have a relatively extraordinary, I shouldn't say relatively.
Say to our audience, she is smiling.
But it's true. This isn't trite. And yeah. I don't know if people understand the level of support. I think all you have to do is go back to the council meeting of Monday and fast forward a little bit or watch the whole thing, but go to the end of the meeting. It's when a lot of folks, you know, it was late. We were there till 10:30, 10:45, yeah. But go to when council actually asked some questions, clarifying questions, and spoke to their own story. And David, apologies for speaking directly and live on this without warning you, but you and your colleagues speak very heartfelt about a passion, a drive, and a commitment to do this work. And, you know, this is not what every city has for city leadership and council. We are really lucky to have 7 individuals who are, I would say, to their core, committed on making this happen. So it's an unusually opportune time right now with staff, with political leadership, and actually with a community who's demanding work and speed and ambition to have that line up and actually make something really happen. And that will have a lasting effect over multiple years, possibly multiple generations.
So I guess that's the question for me, is that, so there was a presentation, there were slides, and there was one slide that had to do with possibly building in affordability for the middle class into the zoning code changes. And then that was pulled out. And then Liz Revord of the Housing Solutions Network immediately mentioned it when she spoke at the podium. And then somebody said during that presentation that it was like April 2nd. So April 1st is like the zoning code changes have to be in by then. But then April 2nd, the work starts on that other piece. How does anybody who's listening know, or can they trust that that's what's going to happen? Because I think a lot of people, the reason that there's so much blowback on this right now, and that there were so many people in City Hall chambers to speak, is because people are very frustrated across the board about this. And a lot of it is personal. A lot of people just have been having a hard time finding housing themselves, and they're professional people. And the market's going crazy, and who knows when that, you know, when that's going to ebb, because you know it will at some point. So Emma, how does that work? How do we know that that's going to continue, and that the fight for that middle class affordability that's built in is going to come to pass?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I'm going to try and feed two birds with one scone here. So okay. The first thing is, you know, I don't want to be mean to my predecessor, because, you know, our department in the city has been working on affordable housing for years. And so we implement a multifamily tax exemption that nobody has ever tried to use. We have fee deferrals and waivers for utility system development charges. We provided density bonuses. So there's been quite a bit of changes over the years. We've relaxed the State Environmental Policy Act requirements for the quantity of units being built. And so the big thing is that the city worked on its sub-area plan so that we could determine and surplus the neighborhood where we're hoping to build Evans Vista. Mm-hmm. And so the April 2nd is part of a multi-step approach, and it's not necessarily things that have to happen one after the other. These are things like getting the master plan accomplished for the Evans Vista, which is going to include workforce and affordable housing, working on our getting a housing assessment and a housing action plan, which is something we're going to be required to do as part of our comprehensive plan update, and starting to scope for that. And oh, by the way, in the meantime, were there some housekeeping things that we didn't achieve with this April 1st deadline that we know we still want to do? For example, examining our densities and seeing if we can eliminate minimum lot sizes, seeing if we, if it makes sense as part of a housing action plan, if it makes sense to require some of those units be affordable. So there's a multi-system project, I would say, for the next couple of years that, I'm rapidly trying to build up our capacity for, because that's a huge issue. We're part of the employers who maybe you had on an earlier show that right. also deal with housing insecurity in our own workforce.
Yeah, yeah. I know that the city wasn't asked to participate in the housing forum that had to do with employers. For me personally, I felt like the city needed to, I think the people who are advocating for that affordability really felt that the city needed to listen more and felt, and I don't necessarily agree with this, because I'm new to this, felt that maybe the city wasn't listening and the city wasn't on this task. And, but there were other employers that we thought would be good to talk to. So we talked to Jake Beatty from the Northwest Maritime Center, and we talked to the man who runs Eden Saw Woods and Chief Ferris. Black. Thank you, Buster Ferris. And East Jefferson Fire Rescue, Brett Black, the chief. And who was the fourth?
Dr. Rosenberry, I think, from
Dr. the Rosenberry from Port Townsend Schools. Yeah, and I wish we could have had 8 employers, represented on that forum. And I wish it could have been 2 hours long instead of 1 hour long. I thought it was really important for our listeners. I mean, I was the producer of all these things, and Phil Andrus took over the production of that particular forum. But I thought it was important to get as many diverse voices in there as possible. I also had some help from other people outside the station and some people here inside the station to point me in the right direction to get some people in that I had never met before. Like, I never met Nashard Carter. I'd never met Fred Kimball before, or Kim Herman, or Peggy Webster. And a lot of these people had really interesting perspectives. Judy Alexander had really interesting perspectives on a lot of these things. And some of them were incredibly passionate about what they had to contribute to these conversations. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by the whole response to it. But I'm just a baby here. I don't know anything about this stuff. Well,
I think Mayor Faber wants to say something. But,
yes.
But just to, no harm, no foul here. We have, the chance to talk every week. Mm-hmm. I think it's more making sure people understand the city plays multiple roles. And actually, this is in some very real way in our self-interest, as in to do, it's almost like a vicious cycle here. If we can't provide workforce housing and housing availability, even, and affordability, right. we can't hire the planners to do the work to do long range planning on housing affordability, you know? So in a way, if we are, we suffer as an employer, we have something between a 15 and 20% vacancy rate. We have 100 people who work for the city, a little more, you know, a very high fraction, double digit, 15, 20% are vacant. And I can almost guarantee that almost the number one reason is we can't find places for people to live. So just to make the point, as an employer, we are desperate for housing for people who work from the city and people at all spectrums of employment, you know, in terms of salary.
Well, good. I'm glad that the city has skin in the game. I appreciate the fact that you do. I think everybody in town, unless you can afford something extraordinary here, I think just about everybody else is definitely aware of this subject now. David.
Yeah, so I just wanted to jump in on the, you know, the discussion from Monday. I definitely hear and understand people feeling like they weren't being heard, and it's not. I mean, they definitely were being heard. I mean, housing affordability is something that I've been deeply aware of and concerned about since I first got on council back when we were first doing the current comprehensive plan. I mean, I've been working on this, trying to push this boulder up the hill. Since I was running for council the first time. And, you know, what I've done an incredible amount of research. I've talked to an incredible number of experts on housing economics. I've looked at white papers across the spectrum of the effects of different housing policy choices on the building environment. And one of the things that came really screaming out of that is that housing economics is hard. And we can't force people to build. And some of the proposed ideas about tying any additional zone density to affordability creates a notable problem because we can't force people to build. I think that incentivizes continuing the you know, building as usual. It incentivizes the single family home that's really expensive because to add units, they're taking on a tax at the very outset of it. And so one of the considerations, I mentioned this, I tried to speak to exactly this on Monday. Look at some of the letters we've received over this process or talk to anyone who's experienced in developing housing locally, who's a builder and or that has looked at trying to do a project, especially in a place where there's not yet an open right-of-way and they have to lay the street, the sidewalks, stormwater facilities, do all of this work to prepare to build. It is impossible to build at our current limited densities for the population that we're talking about here. And so the idea that we should bring down costs but make it more expensive at the same time doesn't really play in the economic space. And then and there's a lot of really solid research on this where including mandatory affordability at low thresholds, basically any additional zoned capacity – it backfires. But that said, one of the things I'm interested in championing, I know we're trying to get away from using April 2nd, but the next step along the way here is taking up what Jessica Bateman, Representative Jessica Bateman, is advocating for in House Bill 1110 at the state, which is allowing for communities to, or in any lot, you'd be able to build a fourplex. Or you could do a sixplex if two of the units have that affordability piece baked in. So that gives a bonus across the board for density, and then also gives additional bonus beyond that for affordability, which would allow everyone to do more and allow the providers, people who had a way to build at that more affordable rate, to get even more out of their land and guarantee that affordability. So that's what I'm interested in, trying to find that sweet spot between, you know, not doing just performative action that says we're making things affordable when no one actually builds that, instead building on the capacity that we have and allowing more people to build affordably.
I appreciate that. You know, we're going to run out of time. And
sorry.
No, it's okay. We've kind of run over, but I'm going to let it go. John, you're...
Oh, I think the other thing, too, is I encourage people to stay in the game here. I mean, I think it's very easy when... Maybe there's a difference of opinion to feel like you weren't heard. It doesn't mean that you weren't heard. And I think because this is a long evolving process where we're going to get to, as Mayor Faber says, a number of other ways to unlock affordability, I would encourage people to stay on the team or at least work with the city on supporting sensible changes to zoning codes, to, you know, blue sky ideas we haven't heard yet. What I fear is that there's so much energy that could be put toward working together. If it was squandered by taking sides on issues or making it personal, then we won't actually get where we need to go. So we need to, this is like a long train. This isn't just like, you know, let's just get down the, you know, the next couple miles. This is like a cross country ride, and we really need to stay on the train together.
Okay, thank you. Emma, I'm going to do like an Amy Goodman thing and tell you you've got 30 seconds. So you have 30 seconds, go.
Wow, that went so fast. You know, we're being ambitious, but we also have to pace ourselves. And, you know, what's really important to me is that, you know, we're able to do this in a way that is actually achievable by human beings that work in my office and myself. So to what John just said, I think, you know, we need the capacity, and we also need to work with the community, who I think we are all looking for the same thing, for the same goals. So I'm excited, and that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. I think that there's a lot of human capital in this town and in this county to move this forward. I certainly hope that we all start pulling in the same direction with, you know, oaring the boat in the right direction, as they say. Thank you all for being here. Emma Boland, John, Mayor David Faber, John Morrow, my co-host. Do you want to say anything before I play a Steely Dan song?
Oh, man, I love it. No, thank you, Jim. Great to see you. We'll see you all soon.
Okay, this is Home at Last by Steely Dan. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM.